The following is a lecture entitled Secrets of the Bhagavad Gita Revealed, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 20th, 2012 at the Urban Yoga Center in Melbourne, Australia.
So, thank you very much for coming tonight. Yeah.
Thanks for coming, everyone. Tonight we are very fortunate to have the association, and we get to listen to His Divine Grace Sankarshan Das Adhikari, who is accompanied by his wife, Her Grace Vishnupriya Devi Dasi. Sankarshan Das Adhikari, in the 1960s, was a singer-songwriter and desired through his music to inspire a spiritual revolution of peace, love, and happiness. And at a particular point realised that there was something missing in order to get that off the ground and fulfil that particular desire. And he realised that there was a certain amount of spiritual realisation that was needed in order for that to get off the ground. And so through his searching, he came across the Vedic teachings of India, and that was able to fulfil what was missing. So, through the Vedic teachings, he became a disciple of the leading exponent of Vedic teachings at the time, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who instructed Maharaj to become a spiritual master and spread the Vedic teachings all over the world. And in so doing, in the hope of re-spiritualising human society. He now regularly circles the globe with his wife, teaching the Vedic science to disciples and to audiences in over 20 countries and 6 different continents. He also has an innovative internet-based training program called the Ultimate Self-Realization Course, which I highly recommend you all sign up to. This has attracted over 13,000 subscribers worldwide in over 100 different countries. And if you go to the address of www.joincourse.com, and you can sign up there. So without further delay, I'll pass you over to Sankarshan Das.
Thank you very much. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Barakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Shakanvitam Shcha. So I've been asked to unpack the secret wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita. I was very happy when I was heard and was requested to do that. This knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is not widely known or understood. Even though the Bhagavad Gita is widely circulated, very few people actually understand the inner meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. This is why it is stated in the 9th chapter, text number 2. Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. Which means that although this is the ultimate teaching of spiritual perfection, it remains the most hidden secret in the whole world. So I was fortunate to find a teacher who actually knew the inner meaning of Bhagavad Gita and is willing to reveal it to me. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So he entrusted me with sharing this knowledge throughout the world to relieve people from all anxiety. So I've come here tonight to teach you how to become free of anxiety. Why are we in anxiety? Is it? Actually, the reason we are in anxiety is we identify with this gross body. This gross body that we have, it's subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. You can't change that. The scientists are trying to change that. But so far, I heard the last report was the death rate is 100%. In spite of all the advances of science, you see. Even Einstein, with all of his knowledge, he still had to die, you see. So, the body is a lost cause. They're never going to make it eternal. It's just, it's hope against hope. The scientists are saying, give us millions of dollars and we'll, you know, we'll figure out a way to cure death. But they're getting rich, but they're not going to cure death. So, the good news is, the body and the self are two different things, you see. We are programmed in our upbringing in life to think that we are the body. Just like, for example, what was the first thing we heard when we came out of our mother's womb? Look, it's a boy. It's a girl. We were immediately connected with some conception of being the body from the very beginning of coming out of the womb, you see. And that was reinforced. Be a good little boy, be a good little girl, you see. We were trained, ingrained in us to be a good little boy, a good little girl, you see. But that boy-girl body, that Australian, American, whatever it may be, body is just a covering, it's a garment, it's not the actual self. So if one can actually understand and realize, this is not me, it's just a covering, then one will be liberated from the anxiety of all the things that the body has to go through, birth, death, old age, and disease. So how does one then actually get a practical realization that myself and this body are two different things? There's many different ways you can do it. Just like you can understand that the body is changing at every minute. The old blood corpuscles are dying and new blood corpuscles are taking their place at every minute. As we inhale, as we exhale, as we eat, as we pass stool and urine, there's a constant flow of chemicals through this place called the body. It's a cluster of chemicals around what in Sanskrit is called the Atma, the self. There's a spiritual particle which is actually seated, physically seated in the heart. And these chemicals cluster around that thing, the Atma. And they're constantly changing. Just like in a river, just like in the U.S. we have the Mississippi River. Big, big river going through the central U.S. So, there are two big, big rivers that feed into it, the Ohio River and the Missouri River. And the Mississippi then goes south and it dumps into a body of water known as the Gulf of Mexico. So if I stand on the Mississippi River bank, I grab a handful of water molecules, what is the identity of those molecules? Is that Ohio River water? Well, it came from the Ohio River, now it's flowing in the Mississippi. Is it Missouri River water? Is it? Or is it Mississippi River water, those molecules? What are they? And next week, those same molecules will be in the Gulf of Mexico. Is that Mississippi River or is it Gulf of Mexico? You see, the same water molecules take on different designations according to where they're situated, that's all. It's the same water molecule. One day we call it Ohio River, another day Missouri, Mississippi, another day Gulf of Mexico. So all these chemicals that are clustered around your atma, we call them you, but they weren't you yesterday. and they won't be you tomorrow. You see? Like even sitting here in this room, we're all breathing. Is anybody not breathing here? Any yogis who have learned how to merge their incoming and outgoing breaths? That's what a real yogi can do. He can actually stop his breathing by merging the incoming and outgoing breaths. Don't try to do it. You may kill yourself. You have to be well trained to do that. You see? That's what the real yogis can do. You see? But anyway, so here we are inhaling and exhaling, you see. So actually we're changing bodies with each other as we sit in this room. We're switching bodies with each other. I'm taking part of your body, you're taking part of mine. We're, you know, and we'll come out. When I walk out on the street after the program, I'll have, you know, I'll have part of your body clustered around my Atma. It's in this way. The bodies are constantly changing. What to speak of when we eat or when we, you know, evacuate. There's this constant flux going on. So what is the body then, and what is the real self? Are my eyes actually seeing, or is it I who am seeing through my eyes? Is it? Are my ears hearing, or am I hearing through my ears? Is my skin feeling, or is it I feeling through the skin? With careful analysis, one can understand the body and the self are different. And at the time of death, we say, oh, my father passed away. But his body is lying right there? What do you mean he passed away? The body and the self are different. Even though the body is there, I'm lamenting my father is gone. But the body is right there. So, from many angles of vision, we can understand that the body and the self are two different things. But yet, we continue to fall back into bodily identification. It's a matter of routine, daily activities. We act and think as if we are this body. And that is the cause of all our anxieties. So the yoga system, especially the bhakti yoga system as taught in the Bhagavad Gita, which is, there are many yoga systems mentioned in the Gita. Every yoga system is meant to detach you from bodily consciousness and to bring you into Atma consciousness. You're the spiritual spark, the Atma. The bhakti yoga system is recommended, especially for this modern age where we're really busy running here, running there, you know, earning our livelihoods, getting educated, raising families, or whatever we're doing, pursuing hobbies, whatever it may be. The Bhagavad Gita is especially recommending the bhakti yoga system. The other yoga systems, to actually be properly done, require one goes away to the wilderness and sit in a lonely place and never to return to civilization again. It's simply to spend your whole life doing deep breathing and asanas and gradually rising the life air through the various chakras until you can bring it to the topmost. It's called the Brahmaranda. You can shoot your life air through the... You can burst a hole in your skull and shoot your life air through the skull. You see, that's the actual yoga system. But that's a very difficult system. It takes actually many lifetimes to perfect that. But the bhakti yoga system recommended in the Gita, yoginam api sarvesham mangatena taratmana shadava mujate yomam samayukta samomataha, Krishna says. That system is very practical. That is the yoga of divine love. Everybody likes love. There's so many songs written about love, you see. We all like to have loving relationships. So bhakti is the yoga of pure, perfect love. Pure, perfect love means without any selfishness. See, in this world I say, I love you, my dear girlfriend, you see. But I'm wanting to get something out of you, you see. But pure love is simply giving, giving, giving. Even if there's no return, that's all right. That's called pure love, you see. Giving, giving, giving. So who you can give your love to and not be exploited in this world, that's the difficulty. But in the Vedic conception, it's revealed that there's actually a source to this whole universe. It's not like Dr. Stephen Hawking says that it all comes out of absolutely nothing, which is not a very scientific conception, really. He says the universe comes out of absolutely nothing. But where's the scientific proof? Where's the experiment to prove you can get something out of nothing? I mean, how many of you ever made popcorn before? Did you start with an empty pot? Or did you put some kernels in the pot? I mean, this is practical. If a scientist wants to say that everything comes out of absolutely nothing, then let him make an experiment to show that you can actually get something from nothing. But they can't do that. There is no experiment where you can take nothing and get something from it. You see? So there is an original substance, which is the root of existence, you see. So in the Bhakti Yoga system, you learn how to reconnect yourself with that original substance. Now, many people can accept the idea of original substance. They say it's just energy. But I would like to point out to you an example to help you understand that there has to be actually a person who is the source, the ultimate source of all the energy. There has to be a person there originally, and I'll show you why. Just like if I have a gold mine, I can extract so much gold from that gold mine. Why? Because the gold mine possesses gold. A goldless mine cannot... You can't mine gold out of a goldless gold mine. You see? So that original substance, the existential substance, the original existential substance is an existential mine that is from which everything has come. Just like we have Melbourne as a manifestation of that existential mine. Sydney, you know, Pacific Ocean, New Zealand, the moon, the sun, the planets, the universe. This is all manifested from that existential mind. But we see there's so many persons here. I'm a person, you're a person. So, you can't get persons from a mind that has no person, you see. You can't get gold from a goldless gold mine, nor can you get persons out of an impersonal origin. So that original source of existence must possess personality. So that original source manifests pure love. That original source is purely giving with no exploitation, you see. So if we can connect with that original person, the source of existence, in a loving relationship, that is the perfection of yoga. Because love actually, when you actually truly love someone, you become connected with them. It may not be physical, but spiritually you're always connected with that person. You're not alone. You're spiritually connected with that person. Just like a husband and wife are very deeply in love. The husband goes to work, but in his heart, his wife and his family are there. That's how it gives him his enthusiasm to work hard all day to support his family. He's got the picture there. In his heart, he's always feeling that connection with his wife and his kids, even though they're, you know, many miles away on the other side of Melbourne. He's feeling that connection within his heart, you see. That is love. So in the same way, one can actually, the practitioner of bhakti yoga feels a connection with that original person. This is not some sectarian concept of religion. This is a universal principle. This is spirituality in its pure form. It's not a religious sect. Nowadays, men have polluted the whole idea of religion. They take it into, make it into some sectarian thing. It's actually, they politicize the whole thing. You know, our group will exploit this other group and we'll call it religion. That's not religion. Religion comes from the Latin word religio, which means to relink or reconnect. So when you can actually reconnect with that original substance, that source, that existential, that person who is the source of all existence, that's true religion, you see. That is a relationship of pure love, of fully giving oneself. This is actually the pure form of recycling. As I explained in a lecture I gave this morning, now recycling is very much of a buzzword in the society. If we don't recycle, we're creating more and more pollution. We're poisoning ourselves if we don't recycle, you see. But they don't realize there's a higher level of recycling which is unknown to the modern day ecologically minded citizens, you see. They're not aware of the higher level of recycling. And that's part of what we're teaching, you see. That higher level, perfectional level of recycling. Because that original source of existence, that original person, that supreme person, you see, it's all his energy. It's all coming out of him. There's this energy here, and we're using this energy. Recycling means we take something out of the earth, now we have to give it back in such a way that it goes back into a pure form again. Now we are brushing with toothbrushes made out of plastic, and we have millions and billions of toothbrushes that are just, you know. I heard there was a big dump off of Japan, millions and billions of toothbrushes floating in the ocean, where they've dumped them, you see. And they won't merge back for a long time. You see, all these toothbrushes floating in the ocean. So because we're not recycling, we're creating more and more of a nightmare for ourselves on this planet. Now, they could make them out of cornstarch. I was one time given a cornstarch toothbrush that will merge very quickly back in, but it's more expensive. And the whole society is run on by the, it's not run by the governments, it's run by the businessmen. They want how they get more and more money, that's all. So the society will continue to, until we have enlightened government, the society will continue to spiral in a downward direction. Because a society based on greed and money, you see, is not an enlightened society. So If persons can understand the original pure concept of recycling, if that can be widely known and understood, and the people demand that from their leaders, then the whole situation on this planet can change. So all the energy, just like if you take something out of the earth and you don't return it to the earth in a form that's, again, in harmony, you see, it creates pollution. In the same way, if we take the energy of that supreme person and we don't offer it back to that supreme person, then we're creating a polluted atmosphere. It's a subtle, on a subtle level, you see. On the subtle plane, we're creating all kinds, a tremendous amount of pollution on the subtle plane. The subtle plane is actually most polluted, even more polluted than the gross plane right now. And it manifests on the gross plane is simply a manifestation of the pollution that's there on the subtle plane right now in this universe. So what we have to do is get back to the subtle plane and start recycling on that plane, you see. Take that energy which is coming from that supreme person and offer it back. Okay, you've given me this energy, now I offer it to you, you see. Just like I have an energy to speak. That's not my energy. That energy is coming from the Supreme Person. So what am I doing with that energy? I'm offering it back to him, because I'm talking about this science, you see. So that becomes a very pure activity, which elevates the consciousness, which frees one completely from the bodily concept of life, which brings one into a state of bliss, knowledge, and eternal existence. So, I can ask now if there's any questions. I have a limited time, and I can't go over time. I think we started, what time, about 10, quarter after? We started around quarter after, I think, so we have about 20 minutes. If there's any questions, I can take those, and if not, I can keep. I have a lot more I can tell you also. If there's any questions, just about the recycling. Okay. The recycling, somebody, you can repeat, because I'm somewhat deaf. Okay.
Well, the reciting part, the last part, how we supposed to do it? I didn't really hear it, so.
You see? He says, you talked about recycling, so how we are supposed to
do it? How do you do them? Well, just like that Supreme Person is manifested in the Bhagavad Gita as Krishna. Krishna says, "Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak pravartate." Aham sarvasya. Say, "Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak pravam pravartate." He says, "I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me." And then he describes in the course of the Bhagavad Gita. This book, Bhagavad Gita, will thoroughly answer your question. Then Krishna explains how you can offer everything back to him. For example, eating. Instead of eating some animal flesh, you see, which is not in harmony with the universal principles for a human being. A tiger can do, but a human being is not meant to do. You can take your food and you can offer it back to the Supreme Person. This is your energy. You've given it to me. Now I offer it to you, you see. And then after its offering, you can eat the remnants of those offerings. This was actually when I first discovered the Bhagavad Gita. This was back in 1968. I was a young kid in my 20s. And I discovered a Bhagavad Gita in the library in Denver, Colorado. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, if you will offer to me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So he was asking for vegetarian foods, you see. So I went, wow, that's incredible. As a Christian, I was never told that you could offer something directly to that Supreme Person. He was way off there, you know, a million miles on top of some mountain somewhere. You could never get close. But here was a concept in the Bhagavad Gita that you could actually approach that Supreme Source of Existence. You could have a direct personal interaction with him. So I did it. I got a little poster of Krishna in a gift shop. I set up a little altar. And I'd take my vegetarian food and I'd offer it to Krishna and then I would eat it. So that's one thing you can do. Actually, there's a great saint, his name is Rupa Goswami, and he says, Jivado, this process of recycling energy begins with the tongue. The tongue has two activities, eating and vibrating. So if you will eat only foods which you have offered to the Supreme Person, and you will also use your tongue to vibrate the glories of the Supreme Person, just like we were having they've been doing the chanting earlier, the Hare Krishna mantra. By these two activities of engaging the tongue and chanting, you can use a Muslim prayer, a Christian prayer, a Jewish prayer. It's not some sectarian thing, it's a universal principle. The Vedas recommend this Hare Krishna mantra. But it's certainly not the only thing. You can, according to your own attraction, you can chant any mantra from any religious tradition. But the idea is to chant a name which actually, a traditional name which denotes that Supreme Person. And if you will vibrate that name and do as a daily meditation, and you will offer your food to that Supreme Person, vegetarian food, and take that food, those two things will get you going on the right path. Jiva, though, it's a matter of the tongue, you see. If you engage the tongue in vibrating the glories of that Supreme Person and offering your food to that Supreme Person, with those two activities, everything will fall into line. Any other questions? Now I can go on talking some further aspects. We can go a little deeper and take it in one notch deeper now. I was quoting one verse from Bhagavad Gita, Raja Vidyam, Raja Guhyam. So now we'll go a little bit further into that verse. Pavitram idam uttamam, pachakshavagamam dharmyam, shushukam kratamam yayam. This is one of the things I really love about this Bhakti Yoga system. Krishna explains Susukam. In Sanskrit it means very, very, very pleasing. It's the most enjoyable form of recreation. why is it so joyful? Why is it so ecstatic? You see? Because that's the nature of the self. The nature of the self, anandamayo bhyasa, it's described in Sanskrit. The self is by nature blissful. In other words, you don't even need anything to be happy. You're happy by nature. We've been taught that, well, you have to have money, you have to have a, you have to have sex life, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, you have to have this, that, to be happy. This is artificial. It's all based on the body. But actually, you don't need anything to be happy. You're happy by your very nature. But we've been so much misguided that we're not even connected with our nature anymore. We're so disconnected, discombobulated, the present moment, from our actual selves, you see. So this science of explaining Bhagavad Gita brings you back. It doesn't impose something on you. It frees you from all that crud, that philosophical, psychological, sociological crud that's been crammed down your throat and crammed down your brain for your whole life. You see? It frees you from it. You get back to your original natural consciousness. It's a gradual process. It doesn't happen immediately. But actually you can taste the bliss immediately. It's like when we're doing this kirtan, this chanting. You can, if you go into it and say, okay, let me just go with the flow, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, then you'll feel great ecstasy because you're actually reconnecting with your eternal, blissful nature which death cannot touch. You have a bulletproof soul. They can put you in front of a firing squad, but they can't, not one bullet will penetrate you, you see. Not one bullet will penetrate you. We have a great philosopher in the West, Socrates. He was challenging the nonsense of the Athenian society. He was cutting through all the crud in every way. He was showing the hypocrisy in every level. The Athenian leaders couldn't stand it. He was showing what rascals they were, what nonsense they were. So finally they said, enough is enough. That's it. You got to drink this poison. We can't tolerate you anymore. You're too much of a problem for us. Now we have to drink this hemlock poison. But out of respect, how would you like to be buried? He said, but you'll have to catch me first. You see? Socrates knew he wasn't his buddy. He knows, you're not going to catch me. You can kill my body with this poison, but you're not going to catch me, you see. So this is called Brahman realization. When you realize that you have a spiritual identity. So that's the first step in self-realization. You have, at least theoretically, you should understand that you're not your body, you see. And then how to make it realize you actually feel it and you can live in that consciousness. That's called realizing it, you see. There's understanding it. In Sanskrit, it's called jnana and vijnana. Jnana means you theoretically understand, okay, cool, I'm not the body. Vijnana is when you actually can feel it, you can actually live in it. You don't even feel that you're a body anymore. Now you feel that you're an eternal spiritual being, and therefore you're celebrating your eternal existence at every minute in all times, places, and circumstances. Nothing of the material nature can faze you, no matter what happens. You're unfazed by it. There's a wonderful verse in the Gita which talks about this. This is in chapter 5, text 20. Naprahyashyat priyam prapya no vijat prapasha priyam Stirabuddhi rasangmudo brahmavid brahmavnistitaha. A person who doesn't get all excited when something great happens, or become depressed when something horrible happens, you see, who is self-controlled, unbewildered, and who knows the science of that Supreme Person, is already situated in transcendental realization. So this consciousness, you see, if you study this Bhagavad Gita under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, you can actually develop this consciousness. You can do it at home, you can do it anywhere. You can move into an ashram where they're doing it, or you don't have to do that. You can do it, make your own home into an ashram, a place of spiritual enlightenment. And see, wherever you are, whatever your occupation is, you can be a professional, a student, a politician, a doctor, a lawyer, a housewife, doesn't matter, a farmer, whatever you're, doesn't matter what you are, unemployed, a surfer, doesn't matter what you are, you see. What your position is, where you're living, you can make your place of residence into an ashram, a place of spiritual enlightenment. So if you would like personal guidance on how to do this, the announcer, Craig, he gave my joincourse.com website where you can sign up for my e-course and get connected with me. Or you can send me an email, S like sugar, D like David, A like apple, at backtohome.com. I can help you. This is my spiritual master ordered me to teach others how to do what he taught me. So, and there's no charge for it. It's all on the basis of love. Anybody who would like to be guided on how to achieve this enlightened state of consciousness, just shoot me an email. I'll get you started. You have a question? You want to write it? Okay, I can give you a card. That's the easiest thing. Just give me my card. And anybody else who wants a card, you can raise your hand. All right, there's another hand. So, Craig, you can pass out these cards. Anybody who wants one? So, this process really works. I've been doing it for 41 years, seriously. I actually began, for me it started as a college kid, you know. My dad said, son, your college days are going to be the happiest days of your life. And I got there and I was totally miserable. I said, oh my God, this is going to be the happiest days of my life. What's my life going to be like? So I was a freshman in college. We're talking 1965, you know. I was thinking, who am I? What's the purpose of my existence? You know, and I got to find out. You know, this is too much. Here I am working hard to make good grades, to get a good job, to get a good wife, to get a good house, to get some good kids, a good car, and get a good grave. Hey, that's not enough. It's just not enough. Sorry. You know. Not enough. There's got to be... Providence couldn't be that cruel. I mean, really, you know. If a flower can be that beautiful, Providence cannot be that ugly. You see what I'm saying? If a flower can be that beautiful, I had faith there had to be something better than what society was dishing out to me. Yes.
I wasn't having a question. I was just pulling my hand like this.
Oh, you just... Yeah. You want to question a question? Okay, that's cool. No problem. You have a question? Okay.
Yes. So back in 1968.
In 68, yeah, I first discovered the Gita, yeah. Yeah.
So at that time, it appears like there were a lot of people looking for meaning in life, society itself.
Oh, yeah, the counterculture was going on full swing.
Is it any different now, or... Have times changed? Is there a decline in this spiritual seeking? Is there a decline in the counterculture? Or is it just more hidden now?
It's still there. I mean, the fact that you're here tonight proves it's still going on. You see, that you're here proves it's still going on. Actually, it's still going. See, in those days, we were the hippies. We call it the hippies. We were a very small number of people, but we got a lot of publicity. We got a lot of publicity because we were so different. We had long hair. We had beads. You know, we dropped out of school. We were living in Golden Gate Park, or, you know, wherever it may be. We got a lot of publicity. There wasn't that many really. It's not that all of a sudden there were so many people then interested and now there aren't. There's still so many people interested. But now then it was totally weird and different to be even think about such things. Now it's cool to think about such things. There's so many yoga places, so many, you know, now it's a whole different atmosphere. And then it was quite, you were stepping out of line, you know, if you did it back in those days. Those are the days when you were supposed to salute the flag, you know. You're supposed to be patriotic and go to Vietnam and kill those commies. I mean, you know, that was the atmosphere. Of course, I didn't. I tricked my way out of it, of course. But it's still going strong. The fact that, I mean, this, for example, I remember the movement called the Hare Krishna movement, and we had a big splash of a beginning. So many hippies joined the Hare Krishna movement back in the 60s. But our growth is still going on exponentially in all over the world. It's still growing on. We're still growing. Yeah, our growth hasn't stopped. In fact, our growth has increased. So I wouldn't say that it's died out. It's just become more normal now.
Right.
That's all. It's more normal to... than it used to be. It was considered very, very abnormal in those days. You had to really be bold in those days to do that. I mean, you know, people might kill you. You know. It was very different. You had to be really bold to step out of line back in those days. When everybody was going off to Vietnam, you know. If you weren't part of it, if you were part of the protest movement, the FBI, which is the U.S., the Federal Bureau of Investigation, would be tailing you and watching your movements. It was, you know, very risky to be part of the counterculture. I remember I had some friends who were being tailed. They had an anti-war theater group, and they were being tailed by the FBI, being watched by the FBI. So... yeah, things are quite different now. Actually, it's more acceptable now to want to become self-realized. It's more acceptable. Spirituality now is becoming very popular. People are throwing off the shackles of sectarian religion, and they're saying, "Yeah, I want to become spiritual." It's becoming very much popular all over the world. People looking how to meditate, how to connect with the divine source of everything, how to reconnect with the divine. It's very, very It's definitely not died out. It's going on full steam. I mean, it's still not mainstream society. It's still a subset, but it's going on very strongly, very strongly. And the fact that I got 13,000 people in my e-course, is it? In over 100 different countries. It's going strong, I can see. You should see how the letters, the emails I get every day, people are so eager to learn this science. So it's definitely going strong, and my course is going to keep growing and growing and growing. Question?
I was just going to add what you said about the e-course.
About the what?
E-course.
The e-course?
13,000 plus is on your mailing list, but then those who are getting, they have their own mailing list to put other people, so there are more.
Oh, yeah, the people who get, I have people... I have, for example, there's an airline pilot for Singapore Airlines who's on my course. And he forwards my emails to over 100 people. Every day he gets my daily email, he forwards it to 100 people. And that's a pilot for Singapore Airlines, you see. And now he's coming to meet me in Sydney tomorrow. He's flying in from Sydney, from Singapore to meet me tomorrow and to get some personal counseling from me.
There are many people like that.
Many people are... This 13,000 is not the full readership. It's just the people actually enrolled on my mailing list, but then they forward it to other people. So, yeah. Yes?
You speak about this pilot, and you speak about yourself being an aspiring musician who found his purpose. Could you possibly give us some suggestions? I'm struggling to find purpose at the moment. Do you have any suggestions?
Yes, I definitely have a suggestion. The first thing, here's a very simple way to understand what your purpose is. Just like, for example, this body or your body, any body, every part of the body is meant to serve the complete whole unit. So there is that Supreme Person who's the source of all existence, whether you say Krishna or Allah or Jehovah, that's the concept of that Supreme Person. That Supreme Person, everything is his energy, so actually everything is part of him, actually. So we're all part of that Supreme, that complete whole or that Supreme Person. So that means we're meant to serve that Supreme Person. So that's actually what your purpose is. You're meant to serve God, serve that Supreme Person. So you have to find out, okay, what does God want me to do? You see? So if you, I recommend you study the Bhagavad Gita. And if you're on my e-course, I can... Do you have a copy of Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita as it is?
Yes.
Yeah. Study that book very carefully, and then you correspond with me. And I hope you... Bhagavad Gita is actually tell you exactly what you, who you are, what your mission is. Everything is there in the Gita. And then you can tell me you're the gentleman who's sitting on the couch who asked the question, so I'll remember, you see, who you are. So yeah, I will teach you how to actually do exactly what Krishna says you should do. And it's not some impersonal thing that, you know, you're just one of some number out of a million, millions and billions of living beings. That Supreme Person treasures each and every one of his children as the most dear and special person in the whole universe. So it becomes, as you gradually reconnect in love with that Supreme Person, it becomes a very intimate, warm, sweet, personal relationship. You don't feel just like you're in the military or something. It's like a family. You actually feel an intimate relationship with that Supreme Person. And then you learn how to please him. The one of the most valuable instructions that is there in the Bhagavad Gita is in chapter 4, text 34. Krishna says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinaha. He says, just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So, by inquiring from the spiritual master, what should I do? What is my mission? He'll tell you. He'll specifically tell you, you see. Just like Prabhupada told me, I also instruct my disciples, my students, you see. I don't invent something new. I just take the same wonderful, loving teachings that my guru, actually his pictures right here, Prabhupada, that he gave to me. And I impart it to those who come to me for training and teaching, I just give them the same thing I got from Prabhupada. So this is called parampara or disciplic succession. So I can train you, what is your mission, what is your purpose, who are you, and how you can become perfect in that mission. I can train you how to do that. Through email, we'll get something going. I come here twice a year. This is my last night, but I'll be coming back in December. I come twice a year, and then we can meet again personally when I come back in December. And I do a retreat, a very nice, if you like to travel a little bit to beautiful places, I do a retreat every Christmas. It's Govinda Valley, just south of Sydney, on the edge of the National Forest, in a beautiful retreat center. And anybody who wants to, interested in that retreat, just shoot me an email. I'll give you the registration information. There's a limit. It's first come, first serve. There's only room for about 50 people, I think, maybe 60. You know, there's cabins and there's, you know, there's only so many beds. So if anybody's interested in that retreat, you know, shoot me an email. I'll give you the registration information. But does that help a little bit? Okay, great. That's really nice. Anything else? We got about, and we're supposed to end now, I think. According to this, it's 7:20? Okay, good. My watch is fast. Well, we got 5 more minutes. That's great. So maybe we can do a little wrap up if there's no Other questions? Actually, questions are also good. Yes.
I was just going to ask, how can we keep on doing our normal work or daily work, because they are our duties that we have to perform, but be detached from it?
How do we go about doing our daily work and not be attached to it?
So how can we do our daily work without being attached to it? The key in the Bhakti Yoga system is not to try to be detached. There are a class of yogis and transcendentalists who try to detach themselves. They say it's all false, it's an illusion, nothing is real. But that's an artificial position. What the Bhakti Yogi does is, as we talked about the recycling principle, he sees that everything is the energy of Krishna, the energy of God. So let me offer it to him. Whatever I'm doing at every minute, let me offer it to the Supreme Person. And that automatically detaches you. You're using it to become more attached to the Supreme Person. You see? So we have a tendency to be attached. You can't deny that. That's a part of our psyche. I have that natural. Man is a social animal. He wants to be attached to other living beings, human beings, you see. And God is the supreme human being. So if you will offer what you're doing in the service of that supreme person, Krishna, God, Jehovah, Allah, like them, if you will offer your service to that, whatever you're doing, the result of your work is offered to God, then automatically you're detached from it without even trying to be detached from it. That's why it's very important to have a spiritual master, you see. That was a turning point in my life, you see. There I was, you know, a singer-songwriter, you know, trying to write songs about higher consciousness, trying to spread higher consciousness. And it was difficult because I didn't have higher consciousness. But when I actually understood the necessity of having a spiritual master, and I actually surrendered to a spiritual master, that made all the difference in the world. So you really need to have a spiritual master. You need to choose a spiritual master. I initiate disciples. I have many godbrothers who are also doing that. You need to pick one that you can give your heart and soul to serve in the service of God. You see, that will be the major turning point for you, to help you. You have to become attached to a particular spiritual master to serve and who represents God, and give yourself in his service. That's what you have to do. You have to become attached to a particular spiritual master. Now I will give myself to this particular spiritual master, especially this one. That's what you need. So now we got about 2 minutes. And I can bring out another point from the verse. Krishna says, because this bhakti yoga science gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. That's not, as I discussed earlier, this is not the word religion. It's actually, presently, the word religion is the most abused word in the entire world. But we're talking about the real meaning of religion, to connect with that source of all existence. Krishna says, because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. In other words, you actually see your true identity. You actually see yourself as you really are beyond the temporary body. You experience an awakening. You become a liberated soul, awakening your eternal identity, completely fearless, because death can't even touch you. So you have the direct perception of your individual self, and you have your direct perception of the Supreme Self. That is the perfection of religging our religion. You see? So now our time is up, and we can do a little more chanting, a little more deep sea diving. You can bring the harmonium back. And then after that, We'll do kirtan maybe 10 minutes or so. And anybody who wants to meet with me one-on-one, I'll be available for one-on-one meetings. This harmonium, it looks pretty beat up, but it's one of the sweetest harmoniums I've ever played in my life. It's so sweet. Wow. Really nice. A sweet tone. Really, really good harmonium. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So the last word also has a meaning in English. Ray. You are a ray of the Supreme. That's what you are. You are a ray of the Supreme. It's like the sun emanates its rays. You are a ray of the Supreme.
that supreme source, that supreme person is emanating you from himself right now. So you're a ray of the supreme. That's who you actually are. So, just like the spark, if it gets out of the fire, it dies. But if it gets back in the fire, it becomes alive. So you just got to get back in the fire, that's all. And the mantra will take you back to the fire. And offering your food to that supreme will take you back to the fire, vegetarian food. So you'll chant, and you'll offer your food to the supreme vegetarian food, and you'll be back in the fire, and you'll feel the bliss. You'll have the knowledge, and you'll have the bulletproof, death-proof, eternal existence. So we thank you very much. Hare Krishna.